and Astarte. But now if you rescue us from our enemies, we will worship you. The Lord sent Gideon, Bedan, Jephthah, and Samuel to rescue you from your enemies, and you didn't have to worry about being attacked. Then you saw that King Nahash of Ammon was going to attack you, and even though the Lord your God is your king, you told me, "This time it's different. We want a king to rule us." You asked for a king, and you chose one. Now he stands here where all of you can see him. But it was really the Lord who made him your king. If you and your king want to be followers of the Lord, you must worship him and do what he says. Don't be stubborn. If you're stubborn and refuse to obey the Lord, he will turn against you and your king. Just stand here and watch the Lord show his mighty power. Isn't this the dry season? I'm going to ask the Lord to send a thunderstorm. When you see it, you will realize how wrong you were to ask for a king. Samuel prayed, and that same day the Lord sent a thunderstorm. Everyone was afraid of the Lord and of Samuel. They told Samuel, "Please pray to the Lord your God for us. We don't want to die. We have sinned many times in the past, and we were very wrong to ask for a king." Samuel answered, "Even though what you did was wrong, you don't need to be afraid. But you must always follow the Lord and worship him with all your heart. Don't worship idols. They don't have any power, and they can't help you or save you when you're in trouble. But the Lord has chosen you to be his own people. He will always take care of you so that everyone will know how great he is. I would be disobeying the Lord if I stopped praying for you. I will always teach you how to live right. You also must obey the Lord. You must worship him with all your heart and remember the great things he has done for you. But if you and your king do evil, the Lord will wipe you out." Saul disobeys the Lord. Chapter 13. Saul was a young man when he became king, and he ruled Israel for 2 years. Then he chose 3,000 men from Israel to be full-time soldiers and sent everyone else home. 2,000 of these troops stayed with him in the hills around Michmash and Bethel. The other 1,000 were stationed with Jonathan at Gibeah in the territory of Benjamin. Jonathan led an attack on the Philistine army camp at Geba. The Philistine camp was destroyed, but the other Philistines heard what had happened. Then Saul told his messengers, "Go to every village in the country. Give a signal with the trumpet, and when the people come together, tell them what has happened." The messengers then said to the people of Israel, "Saul has destroyed the Philistine army camp at Geba. Now the Philistines really hate Israel, so every town and village must send men to join Saul's army at Gilgal." The Philistines called their army together to fight Israel. They had 3,000 chariots, 6,000 cavalry, and as many foot soldiers as there are grains of sand on the beach. They went to Michmash and set up camp there east of Beth-Aven. The Israelite army realized that they were outnumbered and were going to lose the battle. Some of the Israelite men hid in caves or in clumps of bushes, and some ran to places where they could hide among large rocks. Others hid in tombs or in deep, dry pits. Still others went to Gad and Gilead on the other side of the Jordan River. Saul stayed at Gilgal. His soldiers were shaking with fear, and they were starting to run off and leave him. Saul waited there 7 days, just as Samuel had ordered him to do, but Samuel did not come. Finally, Saul commanded, "Bring me some animals so we can offer sacrifices to please the Lord and ask for his help." Saul killed one of the animals, and just as he was placing it on the altar, Samuel arrived. Saul went out to welcome him. "What have you done?" Samuel asked. Saul answered, "My soldiers were leaving in all directions, and you didn't come when you were supposed to. The Philistines were gathering at Michmash, and I was worried that they would attack me here at Gilgal. I hadn't offered a sacrifice to ask for the Lord's help, so I forced myself to offer a sacrifice on the altar fire." "That was stupid," Samuel said. "You didn't obey the Lord your God. If you had obeyed him, someone from your family would always have been king of Israel. But no, you disobeyed, and so the Lord won't choose anyone else from your family to be king. In fact, he has already chosen the one he wants to be the next leader of his people." Then Samuel left Gilgal. Part of Saul's army had not deserted him, and he led them to Gibeah in Benjamin to join his other troops. Then he counted them and found that he still had 600 men. Saul, Jonathan, and their army set up camp at Geba in Benjamin. Jonathan attacks the Philistines. The Philistine army was camped at Michmash. Each day they set out patrols to attack and rob villages and then destroy them. One patrol would go north along the road to Ophrah in the region of Sheol. Another patrol would go west along the road to Beth-horon. A third patrol would go east toward the desert on the road to the ridge that overlooks Zeboiim Valley. The Philistines would not allow any Israelites to learn how to make iron tools. "If we allowed that," they said, "those worthless Israelites would make swords and spears." Whenever the Israelites wanted to get an iron point put on a cattle prod, they had to go to the Philistines. Even if they wanted to sharpen plow blades, picks, axes, sickles, and pitchforks, they still had to go to them. And the Philistines charged high prices. So whenever the Israelite soldiers had to go into battle, none of them had a sword or a spear, except Saul and his son, Jonathan. Chapter 14. The Philistines moved their camp to the pass at Michmash, and Saul was in Geba with his 600 men. Saul's own tent was set up under a fruit tree by the threshing place at the edge of town. Ahijah was serving as priest, and one of his jobs was to get answers from the Lord for Saul. Ahijah's father was Ahitub, and his father's brother was Ichabod. Ahijah's grandfather was Phinehas, and his great-grandfather Eli had been the Lord's priest at Shiloh. One day Jonathan told the soldier who carried his weapons that he wanted to attack the Philistine camp on the other side of the valley. So they slipped out of the Israelite camp without anyone knowing it. Jonathan didn't even tell his father he was leaving. Jonathan decided to get to the Philistine camp by going through the pass that led between Shiny Cliff and Michmash to the north and Thornbush Cliff and Geba to the south. Jonathan and the soldier who carried his weapons talked as they went toward the Philistine camp. "It's just the two of us against all those godless men," Jonathan said. "But the Lord can help a few soldiers win a battle just as easily as he can help a whole army. Maybe the Lord will help us win this battle." "Do whatever you want," the soldier answered. "I'll be right there with you." "This is what we will do," Jonathan said. "We will go across and let them see us. If they agree to come down the hill and fight where we are, then we won't climb up to their camp. But we will go if they tell us to come up the hill and fight. That will mean the Lord is going to help us win." Jonathan and the soldier stood at the bottom of the hill, where the Philistines could see them. The Philistines said, "Look! Those worthless Israelites have crawled out of the holes where they've been hiding." Then they yelled down to Jonathan and the soldier, "Come up here, and we will teach you a thing or two." Jonathan turned to the soldier and said, "Follow me. The Lord is going to let us win." Jonathan crawled up the hillside with the soldier right behind him. When they got to the top, Jonathan killed the Philistines who attacked from the front, and the soldier killed those who attacked from behind. Before they had gone 100 feet, they had killed about 20 Philistines. The whole Philistine army panicked, those in the camp, those on guard duty, those in the fields, and those on raiding patrols. All of them were afraid and confused. Then God sent an earthquake, and the ground began to tremble. Israel defeats the Philistines. Saul's lookouts at Geba saw that the Philistine army was running in every direction, like melted wax. Saul told his officers, "Call the roll and find out who left our camp." When they had finished, they found out that Jonathan and the soldier who carried his weapons were missing. At that time, Ahijah was serving as priest for the army of Israel, and Saul told him, "Come over here. Let's ask God what we should do." Just as Saul finished saying this, he could see that the Philistine army camp was getting more and more confused, and he said, "Ahijah, never mind." Saul quickly called his army together, then led them to the Philistine camp. By this time, the Philistines were so confused that they were killing each other. There were also some hired soldiers in the Philistine camp, who now switched to Israel's side and fought for Saul and Jonathan. Many Israelites had been hiding in the hill country of Ephraim, and when they heard that the Philistines were running away, they came out of hiding and joined in chasing the Philistines. So the Lord helped Israel win the battle that day. Saul's curse on anyone who eats. Saul had earlier told his soldiers, "I want to get even with those Philistines by sunset. If any of you eat before then, you will be under a curse." So he made them swear not to eat. By the time the fighting moved past Beth-Aven, the Israelite troops were weak from hunger. The army and the people who lived nearby had gone into a forest, and they came to a place where honey was dripping on the ground. But no one ate any of it, because they were afraid of being put under the curse. Jonathan did not know about Saul's warning to the soldiers, so he dipped the end of his walking stick in the honey and ate some with his fingers. He felt stronger and more alert. Then a soldier told him, "Your father swore that anyone who ate food today would be put under a curse, and we agreed not to eat. That's why we're so weak." Jonathan said, "My father has caused you a lot of trouble. Look at me. I had only a little of this honey, but already I feel strong and alert. I wish you had eaten some of the food the Philistines left behind. We would have been able to kill a lot more of them." By evening, the Israelite army was exhausted from killing Philistines, all the way from Michmash to Ajalon. They grabbed the food they had captured from the Philistines and started eating. They even killed sheep and cows and calves right on the ground and ate the meat without draining the blood. Someone told Saul, "Look, the army is disobeying the Lord by eating meat before the blood drains out." "You're right," Saul answered. "They are being unfaithful to the Lord. Hurry, roll a big rock over here. Then tell everyone in camp to bring their cattle and lambs to me. They can kill the animals on this rock, then eat the meat. That way no one will disobey the Lord by eating meat with blood still in it." That night the soldiers brought their cattle over to the big rock and killed them there. It was the first altar Saul had built for offering sacrifices to the Lord. The army rescues Jonathan. Saul said, "Let's attack the Philistines again while it's still dark. We can fight them all night. Let's kill them and take everything they own." The people answered, "We will do whatever you want." "Wait," Ahijah the priest said. "Let's ask God what we should do." Saul asked God, "Should I attack the Philistines? Will you help us win?" This time God did not answer. Saul called his army officers together and said, "We have to find out what sin has kept God from answering. I swear by the living Lord that whoever sinned must die, even if it turns out to be my own son Jonathan." No one said a word. Saul told his army, "You stand on that side of the priest, and Jonathan and I will stand on the other side." Everyone agreed. Then Saul prayed, "Our Lord, God of Israel, why haven't you answered me today? Please show us who sinned. Was it my son Jonathan and I, or was it your people Israel?" The answer came back that Jonathan or Saul had sinned, not the army. Saul told Ahijah, "Now ask the Lord to decide between Jonathan and me." The answer came back that Jonathan had sinned. "Jonathan," Saul exclaimed, "tell me what you did." "I dipped the end of my walking stick in some honey and ate a little. Now you say I have to die?" "Yes, Jonathan, I swear to God that you must die." "No," the soldiers shouted. "God helped Jonathan win the battle for us. We won't let you kill him. We swear to the Lord that we won't let you kill him or even lay a hand on him." So the army kept Saul from killing Jonathan. Saul stopped hunting down the Philistines, and they went home. Saul fights his enemies. When Saul became king, the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Edomites, the kings of Zobah, the Philistines, and the Amalekites had all been robbing the Israelites. Saul fought back against these enemies and stopped them from robbing Israel. He was a brave commander and always won his battles. Saul's family. Saul's wife was Ahinoam, the daughter of Ahimaaz. They had three sons, Jonathan, Ishvi, and Malchishua. They also had two daughters. The older one was Merab, and the younger one was Michal. Abner, Saul's cousin, was the commander of the army. Saul's father, Kish, and Abner's father, Ner, were sons of Abiel. War with the Philistines. Saul was at war with the Philistines for as long as he lived. Whenever he found a good warrior or a brave man, Saul made him join his army. Saul disobeys the Lord. Chapter 15. One day Samuel told Saul, "The Lord had me choose you to be king of his people, Israel. Now listen to this message from the Lord. When the Israelites were on their way out of Egypt, the nation of Amalek attacked them. I am the Lord all-powerful, and now I am going to make Amalek pay. Go and attack the Amalekites. Destroy them and all their possessions. Don't have any pity. Kill their men, women, children, and even their babies. Slaughter their cattle, sheep, camels, and donkeys." Saul sent messengers who told every town and village to send men to join the army at Telaim. There were 210,000 troops in all, and 10,000 of these were from Judah. Saul organized them, then led them to a valley near one of the towns in Amalek, where they got ready to make a surprise attack. Some Kenites lived nearby, and Saul told them, "Your people were kind to our nation when we left Egypt, and I don't want you to get killed when I wipe out the Amalekites. Leave here and stay away from them." The Kenites left, and Saul attacked the Amalekites from Havilah to Shur, which is just east of Egypt. Every Amalekite was killed, except King Agag. Saul and his army let Agag live, and they also spared the best sheep and cattle. They didn't want to destroy anything of value, so they only killed the animals that were worthless or weak. The Lord rejects Saul. The Lord told Samuel, "Saul has stopped obeying me, and I'm sorry that I made him king." Samuel was angry, and he cried out in prayer to the Lord all night. Early the next morning he went to talk with Saul. Someone told him, "Saul went to Carmel, where he had a monument built, so everyone would remember his victory. Then he left for Gilgal." Samuel finally caught up with Saul, and Saul told him, "I hope the Lord will bless you. I have done what the Lord told me." "Then why," Samuel asked, "do I hear sheep and cattle?" "The army took them from the Amalekites," Saul explained. "They kept the best sheep and cattle so they could sacrifice them to the Lord your God. But we destroyed everything else." "Stop," Samuel said. "Let me tell you what the Lord told me last night." "All right," Saul answered. Samuel continued, "You may not think you're very important, but the Lord chose you to be king, and you are in charge of the tribes of Israel. When the Lord sent you on this mission, he told you to wipe out those worthless Amalekites. Why didn't you listen to the Lord? Why did you keep the animals and make him angry?" "But I did listen to the Lord," Saul answered. "He sent me on a mission, and I went. I captured King Agag and destroyed his nation. All the animals were going to be destroyed anyway. That's why the army brought the best sheep and cattle to Gilgal as sacrifices to the Lord your God." "Tell me," Samuel said, "does the Lord really want sacrifices and offerings?" "No, he doesn't want your sacrifices. He wants you to obey him. Rebelling against God or disobeying him because you are proud is just as bad as worshiping idols or asking them for advice. You refuse to do what God told you, so God has decided that you can't be king." "I have sinned," Saul admitted. "I disobeyed both you and the Lord. I was afraid of the army, and I listened to them instead. Please forgive me, and come back with me so I can worship the Lord." "No," Samuel replied. "You disobeyed the Lord, and I won't go back with you. Now the Lord has said that you can't be king of Israel any longer." As Samuel turned to go, Saul grabbed the edge of Samuel's robe. It tore. Samuel said, "The Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel away from you today, and he will give it to someone who is better than you. Besides, the eternal God of Israel isn't a human being. He doesn't tell lies or change his mind." Saul said, "I did sin, but please honor me in front of the leaders of the army and the people of Israel. Come back with me so I can worship the Lord your God." Samuel followed Saul back, and Saul worshiped the Lord. Then Samuel shouted, "Bring me King Agag of Amalek." Agag came in chains, and he was saying to himself, "Surely they won't kill me now." But Samuel said, "Agag, you have snatched children from their mother's arms and killed them. Now your mother will be without children." Then Samuel chopped Agag to pieces at the place of worship in Gilgal. Samuel went home to Ramah, and Saul returned to his home in Gibeah. Even though Samuel felt sad about Saul, Samuel never saw him again. The Lord chooses David to be king. The Lord was sorry he had made Saul the king of Israel. Chapter 16. One day he said, "Samuel, I've rejected Saul, and I refuse to let him be king any longer. Stop feeling sad about him. Put some olive oil in a small container and go visit a man named Jesse who lives in Bethlehem. I've chosen one of his sons to be my king." Samuel answered, If I do that, Saul will find out and have me killed. Take a calf with you, the Lord replied. Tell everyone that you've come to offer it as a sacrifice to me. Then invite Jesse to the sacrifice. When I show you which one of his sons I have chosen, pour the olive oil on his head. Samuel did what the Lord told him and went to Bethlehem. The town leaders went to meet him, but they were terribly afraid and asked, "Is this a friendly visit?" "Yes, it is," Samuel answered. "I've come to offer a sacrifice to the Lord. Get yourselves ready to take part in the sacrifice and come with me." Samuel also invited Jesse and his sons to come to the sacrifice, and he got them ready to take part. When Jesse and his sons arrived, Samuel noticed Jesse's oldest son, Eliab. "He has to be the one the Lord has chosen," Samuel said to himself. But the Lord told him, "Samuel, don't think Eliab is the one just because he's tall and handsome. He isn't the one I've chosen. People judge others by what they look like, but I judge people by what is in their hearts." Jesse told his son Abinadab to go over to Samuel, but Samuel said, "No, the Lord hasn't chosen him." Next, Jesse sent his son Shammah to him, and Samuel said, "The Lord hasn't chosen him either." Jesse had all seven of his sons go over to Samuel. Finally, Samuel said, "Jesse, the Lord hasn't chosen any of these young men. Do you have any more sons?" "Yes," Jesse answered. "My youngest son David is out taking care of the sheep." "Send for him," Samuel said. "We won't start the ceremony until he gets here." Jesse sent for David. He was a healthy, good-looking boy with a sparkle in his eyes. As soon as David came, the Lord told Samuel, "He's the one. Get up and pour the olive oil on his head." Samuel poured the oil on David's head while his brothers watched. At that moment, the Spirit of the Lord took control of David and stayed with him from then on. Samuel returned home to Ramah. David plays the harp for Saul. The Spirit of the Lord had left Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord was terrifying him. "It's an evil spirit from God that's frightening you," Saul's officials told him. "Your Majesty, let us go and look for someone who is good at playing the harp. He can play for you whenever the evil spirit from God bothers you, and you'll feel better." "All right," Saul answered. "Find me someone who is good at playing the harp and bring him here." "A man named Jesse who lives in Bethlehem has a son who can play the harp," one official said. "He's a brave warrior. He's good-looking, he can speak well, and the Lord is with him." Saul sent a message to Jesse. "Tell your son David to leave your sheep and come here to me." Jesse loaded a donkey with bread and a goat skin full of wine. Then he told David to take the donkey and a young goat to Saul. David went to Saul and started working for him. Saul liked him so much that he put David in charge of carrying his weapons. Not long after this, Saul sent another message to Jesse. "I really like David. Please let him stay with me." Whenever the evil spirit from God bothered Saul, David would play his harp. Saul would relax and feel better, and the evil spirit would go away. Goliath challenges Israel's army. Chapter 17. The Philistines got ready for war and brought their troops together to attack the town of Soko in Judah. They set up camp at Ephes Damon, between Soko and Azekah. King Saul and the Israelite army set up camp on a hill overlooking Elah Valley, and they got ready to fight the Philistine army that was on a hill on the other side of the valley. The Philistine army had a hero named Goliath, who was from the town of Gath and was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet and had bronze armor to protect his chest and legs. The chest armor alone weighed about 125 pounds. He carried a bronze sword strapped on his back, and his spear was so big that the iron spearhead alone weighed more than 15 pounds. A soldier always walked in front of Goliath to carry his shield. Goliath went out and shouted to the army of Israel, "Why are you lining up for battle? I'm the best soldier in our army, and all of you are in Saul's army. Choose your best soldier to come out and fight me. If he can kill me, our people will be your slaves. But if I kill him, your people will be our slaves. Here and now I challenge Israel's whole army. Choose someone to fight me." Saul and his men heard what Goliath said, but they were so frightened of Goliath that they couldn't do a thing. David meets King Saul. David's father, Jesse, was an old man who belonged to the Ephrath clan and lived in Bethlehem in Judah. Jesse had 8 sons. The oldest was Eliab, the next was Abinadab, and Shammah was the third. The 3 of them had gone off to fight in Saul's army. David was Jesse's youngest son. He took care of his father's sheep, and he went back and forth between Bethlehem and Saul's camp. Goliath came out and gave his challenge every morning and every evening for 40 days. One day Jesse told David, "Hurry and take this sack of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread to your brothers at the army camp, and here are 10 large chunks of cheese to take out to their commanding officer. Find out how your brothers are doing and bring back something that shows that they're all right. They're with Saul's army fighting the Philistines in Elah Valley." David obeyed his father. He got up early the next morning and left someone else in charge of the sheep. Then he loaded the supplies and started off. He reached the army camp just as the soldiers were taking their places and shouting the battle cry. The army of Israel and the Philistine army stood there facing each other. David left his things with the man in charge of supplies and ran up to the battle line to ask his brothers if they were well. While David was talking with them, Goliath came out from the line of Philistines and started boasting as usual. David heard him. When the Israelite soldiers saw Goliath, they were scared and ran off. They said to each other, "Look how he keeps coming out to insult us. The king is offering a big reward to the man who kills Goliath. That man will even get to marry the king's daughter, and no one in his family will ever have to pay taxes again." David asked some soldiers standing nearby, "What will a man get for killing this Philistine and stopping him from insulting our people? Who does that worthless Philistine think he is? He's making fun of the army of the living God." The soldiers told David what the king would give the man who killed Goliath. David's oldest brother, Eliab, heard him talking with the soldiers. Eliab was angry at him and said, "What are you doing here anyway? Who's taking care of that little flock of sheep out in the desert? You spoiled brat. You came here just to watch the fighting, didn't you?" "Now, what have I done?" David answered. "Can't I even ask a question?" Then he turned and asked another soldier the same thing he had asked the others, and he got the same answer. Some soldiers overheard David talking, so they told Saul what David had said. Saul sent for David, and David came. "Your Majesty," he said, "this Philistine shouldn't turn us into cowards. I'll go out and fight him myself."
"You don't have a chance against him," Saul replied. "You're only a boy, and he's been a soldier all his life."
But David told him, "Your Majesty, I take care of my father's sheep, and when one of them is dragged off by a lion or a bear, I go after it and beat the wild animal until it lets the sheep go.
If the wild animal turns and attacks me, I grab it by the throat and kill it. Sir, I have killed lions and bears that way, and I can kill this worthless Philistine. He shouldn't have made fun of the army of the living God. The Lord has rescued me from the claws of lions and bears, and he will keep me safe from the hands of this Philistine. All right, Saul answered. Go ahead and fight him, and I hope the Lord will help you. Saul had his own military clothes and armor put on David, and he gave David a bronze helmet to wear. David strapped on a sword and tried to walk around, but he was not used to wearing those things. I can't move with all this stuff on, David said. I'm just not used to it. David took off the armor and picked up his shepherd's stick. He went out to a stream and picked up 5 smooth rocks and put them in his leather bag. Then, with his sling in his hand, he went straight toward Goliath. David kills Goliath. Goliath came toward David, walking behind the soldier who was carrying his shield. When Goliath saw that David was just a healthy, good-looking boy, he made fun of him. "Do you think I'm a dog?" Goliath asked. "Is that why you've come after me with a stick?" He cursed David in the name of the Philistine gods and shouted, "Come on! When I'm finished with you, I'll feed you to the birds and wild animals." David answered, "You've come out to fight me with a sword and a spear and a dagger, but I've come out to fight you in the name of the Lord All-Powerful. He is the God of Israel's army, and you have insulted him too. Today the Lord will help me defeat you. I'll knock you down and cut off your head, and I'll feed the bodies of the other Philistine soldiers to the birds and wild animals. Then the whole world will know that Israel has a real God. Everybody here will see that the Lord doesn't need swords or spears to save his people. The Lord always wins his battles, and he will help us defeat you." When Goliath started forward, David ran toward him. He put a rock in his sling and swung the sling around by its straps. When he let go of one strap, the rock flew out and hit Goliath on the forehead. It cracked his skull, and he fell face down on the ground. David defeated Goliath with a sling and a rock. He killed him without even using a sword. David ran over and pulled out Goliath's sword. Then he used it to cut off Goliath's head. When the Philistines saw what had happened to their hero, they started running away. But the soldiers of Israel and Judah let out a battle cry and went after them as far as Gath and Ekron. The bodies of the Philistines were scattered all along the road from Shearim to Gath and Ekron. When the Israelite army returned from chasing the Philistines, they took what they wanted from the enemy camp. David took Goliath's head to Jerusalem, but he kept Goliath's weapons in his own tent. David becomes one of Saul's officers. After King Saul had watched David go out to fight Goliath, Saul turned to the commander of his army and said, "Abner, who is that young man?" "Your Majesty," Abner answered, "I swear by your life that I don't know." "Then find out," Saul told him. When David came back from fighting Goliath, he was still carrying Goliath's head. Abner took David to Saul, and Saul asked, "Who are you?" "I am David, the son of Jesse, a loyal Israelite from Bethlehem." Chapter 18. David and Saul finished talking, and soon David and Jonathan became best friends. Jonathan thought as much of David as he did of himself. From that time on, Saul kept David in his service and would not let David go back to his own family. Jonathan liked David so much that they promised to always be loyal friends. Jonathan took off the robe that he was wearing and gave it to David. He also gave him his military clothes, his sword, his bow and arrows, and his belt. David was a success in everything that Saul sent him to do, and Saul made him a high officer in his army. That pleased everyone, including Saul's other officers. Saul becomes David's enemy. David had killed Goliath, the battle was over, and the Israelite army set out for home. As the army went along, women came out of each Israelite town to welcome King Saul. They were singing happy songs and dancing to the music of tambourines and harps. They sang, "Saul has killed 1,000 enemies. David has killed 10,000 enemies." This song made Saul very angry, and he thought, "They are saying that David has killed 10 times more enemies than I ever did. Next, they will want to make him king." Saul never again trusted David. The next day, the Lord let an evil spirit take control of Saul, and he began acting like a crazy man inside his house. David came to play the harp for Saul as usual, but this time Saul had a spear in his hand. Saul thought, "I'll pin David to the wall." He threw the spear at David twice, but David dodged and got away both times. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was helping David and was no longer helping him. Saul put David in charge of 1,000 soldiers and sent him out to fight. The Lord helped David, and he and his soldiers always won their battles. This made Saul even more afraid of David. But everyone else in Judah and Israel was loyal to David because he led the army in battle. One day, Saul told David, "If you'll be brave and fight the Lord's battles for me, I'll let you marry my oldest daughter, Merab." But Saul was really thinking, "I don't want to kill David myself, so I'll let the Philistines do it for me." David answered, "How could I possibly marry your daughter? I'm not very important, and neither is my family." But when the time came for David to marry Saul's daughter, Merab, Saul told her to marry Adriel from the town of Mahlah. Saul had another daughter. Her name was Michal, and Saul found out that she was in love with David. This made Saul happy, and he thought, "I'll tell David he can marry Michal, but I'll set it up so that the Philistines will kill him." He told David, "I'm going to give you a second chance to marry one of my daughters." Saul ordered his officials to speak to David in private, so they went to David and said, "Look, the king likes you, and all of his officials are loyal to you. Why not ask the king if you can marry his daughter, Michal?" "I'm not rich or famous enough to marry Princess Michal," David answered. The officials went back to Saul and told him exactly what David had said. Saul was hoping that the Philistines would kill David, and he told his officials to tell David, "The king doesn't want any silver or gold. He only wants to get even with his enemies. All you have to do is to bring back proof that you have killed 100 Philistines." The officials told David, and David wanted to marry the princess. King Saul had set a time limit, and before it ran out, David and his men left and killed 200 Philistines. He brought back the proof and showed it to Saul so he could marry Michal. Saul agreed to let David marry Michal. Saul knew that she loved David, and he also realized that the Lord was helping David. But knowing those things made Saul even more afraid of David, and he was David's enemy for the rest of his life. The Philistine rulers kept coming to fight Israel, but whenever David fought them, he won. He was famous because he won more battles against the Philistines than any of Saul's other officers. Saul tries to have David killed. Chapter 19. One day, Saul told his son Jonathan and his officers to kill David. But Jonathan liked David a lot, and he warned David, My father is trying to have you killed, so be very careful. Hide in a field tomorrow morning, and I'll bring him there. Then I'll talk to him about you, and if I find out anything, I'll let you know." The next morning, Jonathan reminded Saul about the many good things David had done for him. Then he said, "Why do you want to kill David? He hasn't done anything to you. He has served in your army and has always done what's best for you. He even risked his life to kill Goliath. The Lord helped Israel win a great victory that day, and it made you happy." Saul agreed and promised, "I swear by the living Lord that I won't have David killed." Jonathan called to David and told him what Saul had said. Then he brought David to Saul, and David served in Saul's army just as he had done before. The next time there was a war with the Philistines, David fought hard and forced them to retreat. Michal helps David escape. One night, David was in Saul's home, playing the harp for him. Saul was sitting there holding a spear when an evil spirit from the Lord took control of him. Saul tried to pin David to the wall with the spear, but David dodged, and it stuck in the wall. David ran out of the house and escaped. Saul sent guards to watch David's house all night, and then to kill him in the morning. Michal, David's wife, told him, "If you don't escape tonight, they'll kill you tomorrow." She helped David go through a window and climb down to the ground. As David ran off, Michal put a statue in his bed. She put goat hair on its head and dressed it in some of David's clothes. The next morning, Saul sent guards to arrest David, but Michal told them, "David is sick." Saul sent the guards back and told them, "Get David out of his bed and bring him to me so I can have him killed." When the guards went in, all they found in the bed was the statue with the goat hair on its head. "Why have you tricked me this way?" Saul asked Michal. "You helped my enemy get away." She answered, "He said he would kill me if I didn't help him escape." Samuel helps David escape. Meanwhile, David went to Samuel at Ramah and told him what Saul had done. Then Samuel and David went to Prophet's village and stayed there. Someone told Saul, "David is at Prophet's village in Ramah." Saul sent a few soldiers to bring David back. They went to Ramah and found Samuel in charge of a group of prophets who were all prophesying. Then the Spirit of God took control of the soldiers, and they started prophesying too. When Saul heard what had happened, he sent another group of soldiers, but they prophesied the same way. He sent a third group of soldiers, but the same thing happened to them. Finally, Saul left for Ramah himself. He went as far as the deep pit at the town of Sikiu, and he asked, "Where are Samuel and David?" "At Prophet's village in Ramah," the people answered. Saul left for Ramah, but as he walked along, the Spirit of God took control of him, and he started prophesying. Then when he reached Prophet's village, he stripped off his clothes and prophesied in front of Samuel. He dropped to the ground and lay there naked all day and night. That's how the saying started, "Is Saul now a prophet?" Jonathan helps David escape. Chapter 20. David escaped from Prophet's village. Then he ran to see Jonathan and asked, "Why does your father Saul want to kill me? What have I done wrong?" "My father can't be trying to kill you. He never does anything without telling me about it. Why would he hide this from me? It can't be true." "Jonathan, I swear it's true. But your father knows how much you like me, and he didn't want to break your heart. That's why he didn't tell you. I swear by the living Lord and by your own life that I'm only one step ahead of death." Then Jonathan said, "Tell me what to do, and I'll do it." David answered, "Tomorrow is the new moon festival, and I'm supposed to eat dinner with your father, but instead, I'll hide in a field until the evening of the next day. If Saul wonders where I am, tell him, David asked me to let him go to his hometown of Bethlehem, so he could take part in a sacrifice his family makes there every year. If your father says it's all right, then I'm safe. But if he gets angry, you'll know he wants to harm me. Be kind to me. After all, it was your idea to promise the Lord that we would always be loyal friends. If I've done anything wrong, kill me yourself, but don't hand me over to your father. Don't worry, Jonathan said. If I find out that my father wants to kill you, I'll certainly let you know. How will you do that? David asked. Let's go out to this field and I'll tell you, Jonathan answered. When they got there, Jonathan said, I swear by the Lord God of Israel that 2 days from now I'll know what my father is planning. Of course, I'll let you know if he's friendly toward you. But if he wants to harm you, I promise to tell you and help you escape. And I ask the Lord to punish me severely if I don't keep my promise. I pray that the Lord will bless you just as he used to bless my father. Someday the Lord will wipe out all of your enemies. Then if I'm still alive, please be as kind to me as the Lord has been. But if I'm dead, be kind to my family. Jonathan and David made an agreement that even David's descendants would have to keep. Then Jonathan said, I pray that the Lord will take revenge on your descendants if they break our promise. Jonathan thought as much of David as he did of himself. So he asked David to promise once more that he would be a loyal friend. After this, Jonathan said, Tomorrow is the new moon festival, and people will wonder where you are, because your place will be empty. By the day after tomorrow, everyone will think you've been gone a long time. Then go to the place where you hid before, and stay beside Going Away Rock. I'll shoot 3 arrows at a target off to the side of the rock, and send my servant to find the arrows. You'll know if it's safe to come out by what I tell him. If it is safe, I swear by the living Lord that I'll say, The arrows are on this side of you. Pick them up. But if it isn't safe, I'll say to the boy, The arrows are farther away. This will mean that the Lord wants you to leave and you must go. But he will always watch us to make sure that we keep the promise we made to each other. So David hid there in the field. During the new moon festival, Saul sat down to eat by the wall, just as he always did. Jonathan sat across from him, and Abner sat next to him. But David's place was empty. Saul didn't say anything that day, because he was thinking, Something must have happened to make David unfit to be at the festival. Yes, something must have happened. The day after the new moon festival, when David's place was still empty, Saul asked Jonathan, Why hasn't that son of Jesse come to eat with us? He wasn't here yesterday, and he still isn't here today. Jonathan answered, The reason David hasn't come to eat with you is that he begged me to let him go to Bethlehem. He said, Please let me go. My family is offering a sacrifice, and my brother told me I have to be there. Do me this favor and let me slip away to see my brothers. Saul was furious with Jonathan and yelled, You're no son of mine, you traitor. I know you've chosen to be loyal to that son of Jesse. You should be ashamed of yourself. And your own mother should be ashamed that you were ever born. You'll never be safe, and your kingdom will be in danger as long as that son of Jesse is alive. Turn him over to me now. He deserves to die. Why do you want to kill David? Jonathan asked. What has he done? Saul threw his spear at Jonathan and tried to kill him. Then Jonathan was sure that his father really did want to kill David. Jonathan was angry that his father had insulted David so terribly. He got up, left the table, and didn't eat anything all that day. In the morning, Jonathan went out to the field to meet David. He took a servant boy along and told him, When I shoot the arrows, you run and find them for me. The boy started running, and Jonathan shot an arrow so that it would go beyond him. When the boy got near the place where the arrow had landed, Jonathan shouted, "Isn't the arrow on past you?" Jonathan shouted to him again, "Hurry up! Don't stop!" The boy picked up the arrows and brought them back to Jonathan, but he had no idea about what was going on. Only Jonathan and David knew. Jonathan gave his weapons to the boy and told him, "Take these back into town." After the boy had gone, David got up from beside the mound and bowed very low 3 times. Then he and Jonathan kissed each other and cried, but David cried louder. Jonathan said, "Take care of yourself, and remember, we each have asked the Lord to watch and make sure that we and our descendants keep our promise forever." David left, and Jonathan went back to town. Ahimelech helps David. Chapter 21. David went to see Ahimelech, a priest who lived in the town of Nob. Ahimelech was trembling with fear as he came out to meet David. "Why are you alone?" Ahimelech asked. "Why isn't anyone else with you?" "I'm on a mission for King Saul," David answered. "He ordered me not to tell anyone what the mission is all about, so I had my soldiers stay somewhere else. Do you have any food you can give me? Could you spare 5 loaves of bread?" "The only bread I have is the sacred bread," the priest told David. "You can have it if your soldiers didn't sleep with women last night." "Of course we didn't sleep with women," David answered. "I never let my men do that when we're on a mission. They have to be acceptable to worship God, even when we're on a regular mission, and today we're on a special mission." The only bread the priest had was the sacred bread that he had taken from the place of worship after putting out the fresh loaves, so he gave it to David. It so happened that one of Saul's officers was there, worshiping the Lord that day. His name was Doeg, the Edomite, and he was the strongest of Saul's shepherds. David asked Ahimelech, "Do you have a spear or a sword? I had to leave so quickly on this mission for the king that I didn't bring along my sword or any other weapons." The priest answered, "The only sword here is the one that belonged to Goliath the Philistine. You were the one who killed him in Elah Valley, and so you can take his sword if you want to. It's wrapped in a cloth behind the statue." "It's the best sword there is," David said. "I'll take it." David tries to find safety in Gath. David kept on running from Saul that day until he came to Gath, where he met with King Achish. The officers of King Achish were also there, and they asked Achish, "Isn't David a king back in his own country? Don't the Israelites dance and sing, 'Saul has killed 1,000 enemies, David has killed 10,000 enemies?'" David thought about what they were saying, and it made him afraid of Achish. So, right there in front of everyone, he pretended to be insane. He acted confused and scratched up the doors of the town gate, while drooling in his beard. "Look at him," Achish said to his officers. "You can see he's crazy. Why did you bring him to me? I have enough crazy people without your bringing another one here. Keep him away from my palace." People join David. Chapter 22. When David escaped from the town of Gath, he went to Adullam Cave. His brothers and the rest of his family found out where he was, and they followed him there. A lot of other people joined him, too. Some were in trouble, others were angry or in debt, and David was soon the leader of 400 men. David left Adullam Cave and went to the town of Mizpah in Moab, where he talked with the king of Moab. "Please," David said, "let my father and mother stay with you until I find out what God will do with me. So he brought his parents to the king of Moab, and they stayed with him while David was in hiding. One day the prophet Gad told David, "Don't stay here. Go back to Judah." David then left and went to Hereth Forest. Saul kills the priests of the Lord. Saul was sitting under a small tree on the top of the hill at Gibeah when he heard that David and his men had been seen. Saul was holding his spear, and his officers were standing in front of him. He told them, "Listen to me. You belong to the Benjamin tribe, so if that son of Jesse ever becomes king, he won't give you fields or vineyards. He won't make you officers in charge of thousands or hundreds, as I have done. But you're all plotting against me. Not one of you told me that my own son Jonathan had made an agreement with him. Not one of you cared enough to tell me that Jonathan had helped one of my officers rebel. Now that son of Jesse is trying to ambush me." Doeg the Edomite was standing with the other officers and spoke up. "When I was in the town of Nob, I saw that son of Jesse. He was visiting the priest Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub. Ahimelech talked to the Lord for him, then gave him food and the sword that had belonged to Goliath the Philistine." Saul sent a message to Ahimelech and his whole family of priests at Nob, ordering them to come to him. When they came, Saul told them, "Listen to me, you son of Ahitub." "Certainly, your majesty," Ahimelech answered. Saul demanded, "Why did you plot against me with that son of Jesse? You helped him rebel against me by giving him food and a sword, and by talking with God for him. Now he's trying to ambush me."
"Your majesty, none of your officers is more loyal than David," Ahimelech replied. "He's your son-in-law and the captain of your bodyguard. Everyone in your family respects him. This isn't the first time I've talked